Welcome to the Peaceful Power Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Clausen. And today I have Kate O'Donnell on with us. And I am super excited because I have all three of your other books. And I always recommend your cookbooks to anyone who is brand new to Ayurveda. And I mean, my dog chewed off the cover of my favorite cookbook of yours. And I still use it all the time. So that's how much it probably smelled of food. So I'm excited to chat with you today, Kate, about your new book. So welcome to the show.
Excited to be here.
Yeah. I always like to talk, you know, when anyone's in the Ayurvedic space, how did you discover Ayurveda? How did it become into your life?
I was obsessed with India before I knew anything about yoga or Ayurveda. So I got myself over to India to teach English as a college student when I was 19. And that was how it started. So I just got really sick over there and started working with Ayurveda physicians in southern India. And and I had such strong experiences with the medicine that I just never looked back. And I started doing yoga at that time, which has been a practice of mine for 25 years as well. So a lot of it really has to do with the love of India and all things Indian. Yeah.
I love it. Well, so you have, I mean, as I talked before, you have three other books. And, you know, right now you have your Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health coming out. And as we're talking, it's out into the world. What inspired you to write this latest book of yours?
You know, I just felt, Andrea, that we didn't have the book yet. Mm. You know, we have some Ayurveda books for sure. And a lot of them are about cooking, you know, daily regimens, lifestyle, self-care, home remedy, but we didn't have the perspective of the specific things that a woman's body goes through. You know, so the way that I framed it in the book was to look at the stages of life, you know, from basically, you know, a woman's body undergoes menarche, and then there's the period where we're menstruating. And that's a big deal. Menstrual health is really important to overall health and in how we look at that in Ayurveda. And then we move through the perimenopause and the menopause transition, which is a very big deal right now. You know, I think it's the lens of Ayurveda is just absolutely fantastic for helping us work with a smooth experience of that time of life. And then, of course, there's gestation, birthing, postpartum, you know, so these are all aspects of a lifespan that I really felt like Ayurveda has some jewels. Absolute jewels for women to understand our bodies, their changes, and sort of how to heal, you know, how to like have agency. And I wanted us to have a language that is experiential, not something that somebody over there said that, you know, it's like I feel sometimes like I need to get out an anatomy textbook in order to understand what the F they're trying to tell me about my own body and its functions, you know? And so what I like about Ayurveda's language is, you know, we're talking about like, am I running hot or am I running cold? You know, these are things that we can tune into and understand, you know, the rhythms and the patterns of the body and what that means for our health.
Yes. Oh, I love that you said that. I just went to a workshop the other day and we had to take a quiz on like the anatomy, and me and my partner were like, okay, I think this is right. I think, and we're like, oh, this is so interesting. Just how, I mean, we're not necessarily taught this in school.
No, it's a lot, right? I think, and it's a trick in a way to go so deep into the study of any kind of medicine, whether it's Western medicine or Eastern medicine, you know, and emerge on the other side with a language and a way of connecting to the lay person. You know, that's been my work. I do a lot less work as a clinician, you know, doing one-to-ones and working in that kind of a Ayurveda practice. I've really chosen to be more of an educator. Because it's like, I just feel like there are some general principles and there are some tools for understanding the body that are going to help a lot of people if we can just kind of like understand how to use the tools. Mm.
So how do you kind of walk that fine line of breaking it down from like, okay, here is, you know, the original text and this is what they say, to translating it so your person who maybe has never heard of Ayurveda, like how do you walk that tightrope?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess I've spent the last 20 years working on that. And I think, you know, so I'm a Vata Pitta type. So I think that helps, right? It's like I have the ability to zoom into the space element and see a big picture, you know, throughout the time space continuum. And then I can like hone in on some specifics and really focus on a thread. And I feel like that's the ability, is to take something that's like so epic and find the threads that are going to speak to and affect people, you know, just in their daily lives. And I think a lot, I have to just like give a shout out to all the students over the years who've come to like my workshops. You know, I've been lucky to be able to travel a lot and teach a lot. And I think the most important aspect of my work developing as it has been to see the looks on people's faces when I teach, because I can see this is landing, this is not landing, this is making people nervous, you know, like I can see it. And so I'll be like, okay, that didn't work. Let's not say it like that. Let's find another way to say it. So that's the challenge of writing the books, you know, is that I don't get to see, you know, it's really important. I need the feedback from people. So this is just a shout out to listeners to email me or comment on my posts on Instagram, but like, let me know how you're finding the book, what's confusing, what's helpful, because it's going to take this body of work forward, you know, in the universe.
I can relate to that 100%. So I want to kind of touch on one of those kind of pillars of health, because I do think that this is a, you know, it's having a moment, I think, out in the culture is perimenopause. And I think that's kind of something that in my research, I'm like, okay, what does Ayurveda say about it? You know, one of my teachers had mentioned, like, it wasn't really spoken about a ton. It was just an easy transition into menopause if you balanced your menstrual cycle. So what is your kind of take on perimenopause? And just because, you know, maybe Ayurveda, as we know, it has a different perspective than the Western culture.
Yeah. And I'd agree with you there that the texts don't talk about it, right? And a lot of these words, perimenopause, I didn't hear the word perimenopause like 5 years ago, maybe.
No,
right?
Yeah.
So now it's like, okay, we're using this word to describe a period of time that could be anywhere from 1 year to say 10 years, where the levels of estrogen, namely, that's the big one, are dropping in a woman's body. And that's because the body is moving its priorities and its resources away from procreation. And that's what's fabulous. And this is what interests me about the transition, is then what are we going to do, right? So I think a big part of the transition does have to do with reinventing ourselves, you know, how we are with ourselves first and how we are with the world around us, how we contribute, you know, and the relationship that we have with our space. So this period of time, perimenopause, is this is one thing the texts do say, right, very clearly, is that the cause of menopause is aging, right? So in Ayurveda, we're all about causative factors. You know, what is the causative factor of, you know, the hormones doing this thing, of the estrogen dropping, right? And the body like kind of doing this complete like reorganization. Like estrogen is still produced, right? But no longer by the ovaries. It's like they just kind of like stop doing their thing. And then the adrenals produce some estrogen, you know, the fat tissues producing, like it's still there, right? But it's like, you know, one of the warehouses for Amazon closes down, right? And then they route all the packages to these other two towns. You know, it's like that kind of a thing that the body does. So it's like a major restructuring. And the cause of that is aging, which is huge. I think that's big. I just want to like have a big pause there, you know, that perimenopause, the signs and the symptoms that our body gives us, I think some of them are natural. Some of them may be exaggerated, and that's where we can get to work, you know, but I think that the aging process is a natural thing. And I do believe that flowing with that is important.
As a culture, I don't know if we do well with aging. So
we're
that's
horrible.
Step
we're
one.
Horrible. Yeah, we're horrible. You know, we're really horrible. I've been working with a deep-seated fear of aging for probably 5 years. You know, I'm watching my parents, they're older than most people's parents my age, you know, so I'm like, my dad's in his 90s. It is not pretty, you know, it's a scary thing, but I'm already preparing for it. You know, I think that's part of like what the yogi does as part of our job, you know, is to prepare for death, you know, and be aware of the gifts of the aging process. So I think that's an important conversation, but we'll leave that there. Okay. We'll go back to some of the more practical topics for perimenopause. You know, I feel, what is perimenopause about, right? So it is a switch from the pitta time of life to the vata time of life, right? So we talk about, okay, the ovaries and the estrogen. And so there's these changes happening from a Western perspective. From an Ayurvedic perspective, there's that, shift from the active and hot and penetrating, you know, very active aspects of pitta, that's like working in the world, you know, being in community, raising kids, like being, you know, involved in your kid's school and running your business, you know, all the things that we do in that active stage of life. And that's when I think the reproductive organs, or what I call in this book the generative organs, speaking to sort of the importance of us viewing our energy as generative, not just as reproductive. And the generative energy is that which I think it's how it manifests in the world is likely to change for a lot of women during perimenopause and menopause. You know, so when we move from the pitta time into the vata time, there's more dryness. You know, the body may be colder, lighter. You know, I think our diet, I do think our diet will change during this time. And so what's so interesting about perimenopause is how do we do change, you know? And for some people it's super smooth, and for some people it's rocky. I think a bit of that has to do with the constitution. And I think a lot of that also has to do with our manner of doing life. You know, I think that the more stressed we are, the more difficult it will be. I think the big instigator, and this is what Claudia Welch's work pointed out in her book, Balance Your Hormones, Balance Your Life. That was the first women's health book we had.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, definitely listeners should absolutely check that out. And that one, you know, she really nailed it down to the imbalance created when our stress hormones are high. So when adrenaline and cortisol are high, which I think for a lot of people they are, and we could talk about the reasons for that, you know, that's the causative factor, is our relationship with media, our relationship with work, you know, our relationship with fear, worry, you know, coping with the future, all these kinds of things that stress us out. And the stress hormones, they're very much like pitta. I mean, they're hot, they're drying, you know, they're circulating in the bloodstream. They're definitely need estrogen to oppose them, those hormones, right? Because estrogen is cool and slow and heavy and all the things that oppose stress. So as we begin to lose estrogen, which is natural, right? Like it's a thing that happens, you know, yeah. And it starts around 35. So it's earlier than you think. I noticed it. I mean, I was reading Claudia's book around that time, thank God, but I did make some changes in my late 30s for sure. Just kind of slowing down. And I stopped treating my body as though it was immortal, I think around that time. Mm-hmm. And so I think the problem that women see in perimenopause can very simply just be said that we're losing our ability to buffer stress physically, right? The body is physically losing that buffer. And so women who just like tank through life, you know, and you do all the things and you're a heavy hitter and you're badass, all these things, you're rolling, everything's great, you know? And then it's like, why am I like, I have one glass of wine and I have a hangover immediately. Or I'm at the end of a busy day, I lay down and I'm just like a nut house. I can't sleep. But this, like, why are these things happening now when they didn't before? And I think it's because we're naturally losing our stress buffer.
You know, as you're saying that, I'm like, oh, this tracks with so many of the clients that I've worked with. And that is, it tends to be around that age. I had so many clients, you know, when I was in my mid-20s, and working as a trainer, all of my clients are like, oh, wait till you're 40. 40 is the age where everything hits. And as you're saying this, I'm like, oh, this makes sense. It's because they were those heavy hitter, hitta go-getters and don't know how to calm down and don't have any coping mechanisms to help themselves, like just relax. So that's very interesting. I can see that in, you know, for many years of, you know, being and working with women's health, that is very true. And that's why I love Ayurveda. You put it so just, I mean, that's what Ayurveda is. Like that makes sense. Whereas in the West, we don't necessarily have anything besides just being like, oh, it's our hormones. And then what do you do? And then people get confused and then doctors don't know how to help. And then people just feel stuck. So maybe if people are listening and you're thinking like, how could I, you know, what are some maybe just tangible things? What could I do to help myself not hit that wall when I turn 40?
Right. Or we probably have some listeners like me who are already in their 40s, right? Like, what do you do when it's already happened?
Yep.
I think a lot of my readers are going to be in that boat as well. And, you know, the obvious one is, okay, like, let's try to relax. And it's like, yes. And, you know, that is a whole thing, right? That's a whole thing. So I have been focusing in these interviews, you know, coming out around the time of the book's release, I've been trying to make sure, although like I want us to be clear that our causative factors for the symptoms that trouble us are often having to do with how we do life and making changes in how we do life might take a few years. So meantime,
100%.
Right? So meantime, while we're working on that, what can we also do? Right? So let's imagine that estrogen, with that which is dropping, right, is this cool, heavy, moist, soft, you know, like juice generating aspect of the body, right? Estrogen goes around and is like, let's make some eggs, baby, you know, like that's its job. And I think we want to find other ways to bring that quality into the body. Right. And so if we start with the world of substances, you know, we can work with substances, food and herbs. We can work with activities for sure. Right. Like your physical training clients, you being like, well, let's learn how to do yoga nidra. Right. Let's add a 20-minute yoga nidra at night or something. You can still go do your bust your jams in the gym, but let's add this like also slowing, cooling thing. Right. So we got substances, we got activities, and then we've got, of course, the energy and the mind and all the deep stuff that takes a while. So substances, right, is always a nice place to start. And so I always start with food. And if food's not hitting the spot, then we'd start to look to herbs. And it's a good idea when we are looking at using herbs. You know, everybody's heard of ashwagandha. People have heard of shatavari, right? Those are sort of the main two like hormone regulators. Shatavari specifically provides the qualities that the body uses to build estrogen. So sometimes we're missing those qualities. So we want to look to foods that are cool, little like unctuous and moist. And one of the things, so what's interesting, right, is does the Ayurveda text, do they talk about food for women? Mm-hmm. No, except when she's pregnant. Right. And during that's the first trimester, let's say, of her, not first trimester, but the first postpartum, I would say the fourth trimester. There we go. Right. During that time, the diet is very specific for all these months. Right. And so that's where I was like, ooh, we got some info on food. Right. And so the qualities that a woman's body needs during postpartum, I think, are very similar, actually, to the qualities that we want to, right, that we want to raise during perimenopause and menopause. Because, you know, a woman with a young baby is trying to lactate. So we need milk, right? Talk about unctuous and cool substance, right? So the conversation in the text has to do with a few foods, right? And this is where, so the fourth part of the book is recipes. So instead of being like recipes for postpartum, you will find lists of recipes for postpartum and for vata type menstrual cycle and for menopause and all the things, right? But you'll find that a lot of the recipes are cross-referenced, right? because the qualities that we're looking for are similar. And when we put it in this just so simple and elegant lens, you know, where it's like, we need more cool, moist and heavy stuff because we are getting beat up by stress hormones. And, you know, and it's kind of like nobody's fault. The world is the way it is. You know, everybody's slightly crazy. So we're all getting beat up by stress hormones. So to oppose that, things like milk, right? And so any milk can be made from a cow, from a goat, from an almond, from an oat, right? It can be made from so many different substances. And what we do is we kind of compound that with water, remove some of the fibers, and then you get this milk-like substance, right? Which that's what we're looking for is a milk-like, because the rasa, the juice, you know, that moves through the body, that nourishes us, is called rasa. And so deep dive on rasa in this book for sure. And its qualities are described as being milk-like, mm-hmm. right? So it washes through the tissue. So you'll find a lot of like milk-based tonics. So like, I really encourage people to, you know, make your own almond milk. Almonds get special mention for the generative tissues. And we can make, you know, that's a great vehicle for if you're taking herbs like ashwagandha or shatavari, fantastic vehicle there. We could add a little ghee. So ghee is another one of those substances that it gets the digestive fire going, and it actually helps the body metabolize the moist, cool, and heavy stuff. We add a little bit of warming spice in there. Ginger powder is big for reaching these organs. So ginger powder and a little bit of milk, you know. We might do a sweetened yogurt. And that's interesting, right? Because yogurt isn't always a favorite in Ayurveda. But for this, when taken with a little bit of sweetener, and the sweetener actually stops the fermentation process. So it stops a yogurt from getting really sour. And it stops it from also continuing to ferment in the gut, which is problematic in how we look at yogurt, right? And its effect on the body. And then, of course, there's spices like a little pepper, ginger powder, cardamom, cinnamon, nutmeg, right? Like these warming spices, but not like chilies, because, you know, we also don't need more heat, right? So there's different preparations with sweetened yogurt. We might mix it with rice and make like a curd rice, they call it in India. I tend to call it yogurt rice over here because curd sounds kind of gross. You know, there's things these are some of the foods that are mentioned over and over again for women. And the other one is a urad dal, which is the black. It looks just like a mung bean, which is the little green bean that we use in khichdi. But there's one that's black on the outside, white on the inside. And that's the main ingredient in dosa mm-hmm. for people. Anybody who's lucky enough to have South Indian food has had dosa. That's the ingredient there. And urad dal is considered one of the best sort of recovery foods and building foods to sort of build like muscles tissue specifically. So keeping our bodies strong, you know? And so there's recipes for sort of integrating your adal, which a little bit goes a long way. It's kind of a little heavy to digest. So those are some of the examples, right, of the different substances and sort of how they work and why we might use them to provide the qualities that the body needs to buffer that stress. And then there's our external therapies like oil massage, absolutely huge. I'm sure you've talked about oil massage in other podcasts, right? So oil massage is absolutely huge. And, you know, we could do the ears, we could do the feet, we could do the whole body, right? And that is also just kind of a non-negotiable for balancing stress.
100%.
Yeah.
Man, so I do Ayurvedic postpartum doula work. And, you know, everything you're saying with the food, I was like, this is just, I mean, spot on. And as you were saying those foods and how you have that crossover reference, so I'm 39 and I have a 1-year-old, and I have a lot of people.
I can see them back there. I can see them in one of those walker things.
Yeah. I don't know what he's doing. He's, who knows, throwing stuff around. So like all of those, I have a ton of friends like my age who are, you know, they're like, oh, it's perimenopause and I'm postpartum and all of the everything hitting at once. And as you're describing what to do, I'm like, yeah, this is just spot on. Cause I have personally have not had any issues of, now my mom again went into menopause quite late. So I'm not expecting, I mean, not for another like 6 years before I'm even thinking about any perimenopause, but you know, some of my friends, maybe a little bit earlier, and everything that I'm doing, I'm like, this is just spot on for perimenopause, which is great pointers for people who might be in my boat. Cause I know there's a lot of people listening, cause I think COVID pushed a lot of us to having kids maybe a little bit later. And then you're like, oh shoot, now my hormones are really out of whack. Mm-hmm. So I just want to say, like, this is like great information for people who might be listening in that phase of like, oh no, what am I going to do? I've ruined everything. Everything is off. Cause that's often what I hear from people, but just knowing like following these practices and, you know, helping yourself ground back down and the warming food, the slowing down, because that can be also hard postpartum. Lots of mamas want to just run around and do all the things, you know, at 10 days postpartum, I'm like, just rest and be.
No,
so I think this is gold.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you're here. Thank you. Back to me saying that, you know, like I need feedback. So this is great. This is great. Thank you, Andrea. But, you know, it troubles me that we, I think, have a cultural attitude, and I do write about this in the book a bit, that in the course, you know, with my deep dive into like the course of all the crazy shit that a body does over the course of a lifetime, giving birth is the biggest one. It is the biggest activity that our vata, you know, our movement principle will have to do, and it is an absolute blowout. Right? An absolute physical and energetic blowout, as it should be.
Yeah.
It's a new soul, like breaking the barrier of physicality, right? And coming into the world. So of course it's a big deal, you know, and it's this amazing Shakti, or this generative force, right? In a woman's body that does that. So to expect that 6 months, a year, sometimes more, things are gonna like be different, makes sense, right? For sure. And I feel that we don't respect that as we could, you know, like culturally. I mean, it's like people should have t-shirts walking around like high five to the new mothers, you know, like. And I think we underestimate the amount of time that it takes to for that vata, that movement principle, which is very erratic. You know, the energy of vata is like, sometimes I describe it like, do you know when there's like a car sale place and they have one of those blow up? It's like a big like hot dog shaped blow up person, you know, with the little arms. And on a windy day, like, you know, the air thing's blowing into the balloon, you know, this tall cactus or whatever it is with like a cowboy hat. And on a windy day, that thing is undulating, right? It is like rippling. It is crazy. That to me, when I see that, I'm like, yep, that's what vata looks like when it's when it's out of balance. And that's what's going on after gestation, you know, because all the flow, every single ounce of energy the body had went in this one direction, right? And then it's like, we got to close up the portal there. You know, the body has to heal. The tissues have to knit back together. Meanwhile, we're putting out milk. We're not sleeping. I mean, there's so much going on there that to really prioritize any amount, I understand there's probably like 30 minutes here and there that a woman can prioritize anything, right, during that time. But to get the warm, moist foods going on and to understand that when you look at that balloon outside the car sale place, like that's what's going on with your digestion.
Yeah.
During this time, right? And so you can't just put whatever you want in there and expect it to feel good, you know, and to support your body in doing what it needs to do. It's like we want to put in things that are going to soothe that erratic sort of undulating energy that's moving through the central core of the body, you know. And so that's your things that are heavy, like even oatmeal with a little ghee and spices, fantastic.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't have to be like your specially prepared Ayurvedic food. It certainly can be. And I think that that's a great, I think we need more Ayurveda doula care because it's just so specialized. There's so much information in the text that is down to like the week.
Oh, yeah.
you know, on each week, this is what the woman can eat. And that's the most information we have in the text, really. It has to do with that. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I became one. Cause I was looking for someone locally after my son or when I was pregnant, and nobody here in like the Twin Cities metro area, you know, I'd hours away, one person in Wisconsin, but you know, six hours, they're not going to drive for 6 hours. So that's where I'm like, oh, I would like to be this and, offer the support here. Cause I think it's so needed, and it is a different type of doula work than a regular doula too. And, so, you know, thank you for speaking on that. Now I do want to kind of circle back into the book. Cause if people are listening and maybe they're new to Ayurveda and they're thinking, oh, is this book going to be too much for me? Am I going to be able to digest it? You know, how did you kind of write it with maybe a newbie in mind, but people who maybe have been practicing Ayurveda for years?
Yeah. I mean, so this is the bane of my existence, kind of, is that every time I write a book, I have to also provide all the information as though it's someone reading their first book ever about Ayurveda. I do that with all of my books. So the whole second part of the book is for the beginner, basically. You know, it's all the anatomy, you know, your five elements, your three doshas. But I did go into specifically how the doshas are in a woman's body, you know, a body that has the ovaries and the uterus, vaginal canal, some of the specificities there too. You know, there's certain aspects of the energy movements and the how the doshas are doing their jobs that is different, maybe a little specific to women. And then I go into the daily routines. You know, like it's all right there. It's, you know, you start your day with scraping the tongue and drinking hot water. And if you're only going to do one thing out of this whole book, that's the one. And I tell you why, you know? So I think in that way, I don't know how many people are going to sit down and open the book and read it from page one.
Okay.
I expect less of that. I think just the way our brains work, right? But so the first section of the book is like all the hormone business, you know, like how does Ayurveda talk about hormones? What is the anatomy? What do the texts tell us? What do they not tell us? You know, and my MO as an author is if I'm going to veer away from textual knowledge and be like, based on my research, you know, and my practice, this is what it looks like to me. I will be very clear, right? I'll be like, this is like Kate O'Donnell coming in, you know, based on experience to say, this is what, you know, this is how I understand this thing. And then at other times the texts say this, and let me break that down for you. But beginners can definitely, I think that first chapter might feel like, whoa, because there's a lot of anatomy in there. But what I did do was record the first three chapters of the book as audio. Because I pretty quickly realized that looking around at my community of women, I was like, oh my gosh, these people they have a lot more car time driving around, picking up kids and bringing them to things. So I was like, we need an audio. So if we can put this in the show notes, but when you purchase your book, go to the Women's Health tab on my website, we'll put that up. And then there's a form that just asks you where you bought the book, you know. And then it'll, you just put in the info and it'll bring you to the tracks. Perfect. So people can listen. And I think for people who are not just people who are new, but anybody trying to digest a book, you know, the first three chapters are the heavier lift, according to like breaking down perspectives on hormones and Ayurvedic view of the body. So listening might help some people take it in and not trying to just like read the whole book.
That's great. Especially when, like for me with couple kiddos. Sometimes it takes like a year to get through like some of my heavier books that I could have maybe gotten through in a month. And now I'm like, do the best I can. So that's helpful.
Yeah. And the tracks are free. You know, I just want people to have access to that. I just want people to like get the book, you know, in the bod.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then your book you can find anywhere, I'm assuming Amazon, wherever you purchase books.
Yes. Yeah. And it's great for an author if you walk into your local bookstore and ask for it.
Ooh,
that's super great. That's because it helps with our distribution. If your store doesn't know about my books yet, now they do. So that's nice. Yeah. But hey, if Amazon is like how it's going to happen, then just do it.
I love it. Well, where can we connect with you at? Website, social media?
I'm on Instagram at kateodonnell.ayurveda. A lot of action going on there. and healwithkate.org. Healwithkate.org. And I am going to be on the road on a book tour. So there's a book tab on that website. So that'll be until the end of May. And I do have a retreat, an in-person retreat in Massachusetts the last weekend of May. So love to see some people live.
Yes. How are you going to balance your Vata as you're doing all this travel and promotion?
Oh, yeah. I definitely plan to share that. Like, I'm trying to learn how to make reels right now. So I'm trying to learn how to share this, but I want to share it as I go because I know a lot of people are curious. And I'm like pushing the envelope in a way that I have probably never done in the next 2 months. Yeah. To travel this much. So, you know, I have my plans, but like when the rubber meets the road, that's where we'll see what we're doing. But I do have like balls for rolling on, you know, I have an exercise band. I have like a bunch of different herbs for different things that might happen, you know. I no longer travel with my own like food. You know, I used to travel with like Khichdi mix basically, but I kept, the security kept going off at the airport with that. So I don't do that anymore, but I will be sharing info about via my blog, via Instagram, you know, about like how I'm eating and like how I'm doing the thing. I do travel with a massage oil for sure though. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's going to be helpful. Also helpful for people who, like, I work with a lot of clients who do a ton of traveling and I don't necessarily do it anymore. So like having tools that you're like, hey, this is useful, or, you know, this isn't going to work because they don't always have time to do a ton of routine, but something. So
yeah.
Looking forward to seeing these tips.
Yeah.
Well, I just have one final question for you. I always like to finish on a weekly challenge to the listeners. And then when I have a guest on, I have you throw out a challenge to everyone. So what would you like that to be this week?
Well, I'm going to bring it back to the number one Ayurveda routine, which is tongue scraping and sipping some hot water first thing. So you get, that's my challenge, is to try to do that every day. Because if you do that for a week, you won't stop. You'll just feel so good that you'll want to keep doing that. Yeah.
100%. Well, thank you so much, Kate. I'm looking forward to reading your book and diving in and recommending it to others. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us.
Yeah. Had a great time. Thank you.
And everyone, go out there and spread your peaceful power.